This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 27th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is my buddy, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
It's not even 11 o'clock. What are we doing?
We're going to get John to bed early tonight. We won't have to pull an all-nighter.
Well...
I tell you this, it's a lot easier to put me to bed than it is to put these twins to bed.
Yeah, probably don't need a stick with you.
Well, I don't need a stick with them either. But
wow, I think some kind of herder's tool or sheepdog might probably help.
No, I've been using a lot of Santa Claus since it's September, and you're not going to get this, that, and the other. But otherwise, yeah, it's very challenging. You know what I wish? Because I tell you guys, Jim and I got to meet up last week, and he got to see the twins for the first time in almost 5 years. Well, 4+ years, we'll put it that way, because you saw them in Hawaii
since they were
once.
Less than a year old.
Correct. And they were so quiet and shy. I'm like, can we get rid of this coronavirus situation so I can have people over so the kids would be quiet?
So in other words, like, wait for the coronavirus to be over, but don't tell the kids.
No, tell them so that they say, look, it's over. We're going to be having company all the time. And then you're going to be quiet and behave.
Oh, I see.
Because they're usually more talkative and out of control. And they were so well behaved when you got to meet them. So it was good to see. I had not seen Jim. I'll have you guys know. We had not seen each other. I was trying to do the math. I don't even remember the last time we saw each other before.
My guess is sometimes around the end of 2019 or the beginning of 2020. Normally we run into each other. We go out and eat sometime around there. So,
Right. So that was fun. So thank you again for coming out.
I was moved. It was fun. Spent way too long.
A fun 10 minutes.
it was about a half hour, I think, but yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Brandon Laird of the Lotte Marines. Jim has projections for the winners of both leagues, and we'll talk about the races, and we'll talk about MVPs and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So also, please remember to go to YouTube, watch the YouTube Pacific League channel, comment, sign up, subscribe, and watch the videos. But comment a lot. Comment a lot if you would, please. Thanks a lot. So we are now heading into the business end of the season. And on Wednesday, I had the chance to sit down on a phone call with Brandon Laird of the Marines. And it was almost like old times because he was at the ballpark. He said, let me talk to you after I hit. So he took BP and then I called him on the phone. So it was almost like being at the ballpark, only it was via the telephone. He's 34. Wow. He's in his seventh season in Japan. He was on the show on March 29th of this year. So if you'd like to go back and listen to that interview and compare it to this one, please feel free to do so. And this year, you know, he's really doing well. He's staying healthy, number one. He's hitting for his best average, his highest slugging percentage, his highest on-base percentage. And, he could break some other personal bests if he continues to produce on this kind of arc that he's on right now. And he's doing really well. He's having a good stretch. And he has been particularly productive in the second half since this long break. And he's putting together this second half that's going to leave a really good impression and boost the team as well as himself, boost the team possibly to its first PL title since the Bobby Valentine squad in 2005, in the 2005 season. Now, Brandon was supposed to be on the Olympic team for Mexico, but things just didn't quite work out. Now, he didn't go into it. I didn't ask him. It was kind of off the record stuff, but it just didn't work out. So he'll talk about that briefly in the interview, but you know, it's our buddy Brandon, and he sounds good, so let's take a listen.
Joining us this week by phone, but from the ballpark, is Brandon Laird of the Chivas Lotte Marines. Thank you so much for taking some time for us this week.
You're welcome, anytime.
Man, we always appreciate it so much. So you're in a groove, and physically, how are you?
I'm good. I'm healthy, and you know, that's most important. I'm just trying to finish the second half strong, and you know, we're playing good baseball, so you know, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. Now, we spoke back in March, and we talked about your team in detail. Actually, now, how has this season played out when you line it up with your expectations before the season?
I think it lines up just like I said. You know, I have a good feeling about this team. We have a lot of talent. I feel like we're, you know, a younger team. But I feel like we're just clicking right now. You know, everybody's doing their job. Pitchers are doing well. We're playing good defense. And, you know, we're just having a lot of fun. So, you know, the atmosphere is good.
You know, it's certainly not over by a long shot, but what goes through your mind when you hear things like, you know, the Marines are in first place, alone in first place for the first time in 51 years, and you hear talk about magic numbers and all that stuff? What goes through your mind?
It's cool. You know, especially, you know, since it's been such a long time. I feel like you can feel it here, too. I mean, like that, like I said, the atmosphere is good. Everybody's having a good time and, you know, having fun. It's always fun when you're winning. And, you know, when you hear that magic number, it's a good feeling. You know, I got that opportunity when I was with the Fighters. And, you know, like I said, we have a lot of young guys on our team. And, you know, it's our first time, you know, being in this position. So, you know, hopefully we can just, you know, finish strong.
Yeah, no, I mean, you pointed to a few aspects of the team, but what in particular has been a key for this team this season?
On a pitching standpoint, I feel like, you know, obviously we're missing some injuries, like with Taniguchi and that, but I feel like, you know, guys have stepped up. You know, like Ojima's been pitching well lately. You know, we got Sasaki has been pitching, you know, lights out for us, and we got Lima going tonight, who's having a good year. So I feel like, you know, our pitchers are, you know, doing well. And, you know, lineup-wise, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm doing what I need to do. Martin's having a good year. And, you know, we have a lot of other guys who are swinging about well. So, you know, I feel like those are, you know, the major key points.
Now, you mentioned Leonis, and we all know he went down with it looks like a broken toe. The ball off of his foot on Monday, was it? So I hate to ask questions like this because you don't know either, but, you know, you got guys like Echeverria, who's playing really good defense and stuff, but how do you really make up for that loss of the bat and the defensive prowess that Leonis brings to the field?
Yeah, I mean, you know, losing Martin, you know, a player like him, you know, it's definitely a blow. Something we weren't expecting, but like you said, you know, to fill in on both sides of the field, like, you know, for somebody like him, I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's time for, you know, somebody's going to need to step up. You know, I feel like, you know, we're going to be rotating guys, you know, out there. And, you know, we're just going to just be rolling with, you know, who's playing well and swinging the bat well. That's how I feel.
Yeah, and I mentioned Echeverria, and man, has he made some incredible plays this year.
He's unreal.
What has been the best play that you've seen from him this season? Because there are a bunch that are still on YouTube.
Yeah, he's made a bunch. He just made a game-saving play in Sapporo off of Nishikawa. I mean, line drive up the middle, and he just snagged it. I mean, I feel like every day it's a highlight reel. You don't know what you're going to get from him that short. So it's been fun to watch. And, you know, I feel like even, you know, from the batting standpoint, I mean, it's his first year over here. He's new to the league. He's still learning, you know, Japanese baseball and how they pitch. And, you know, somebody that has his major league experience, you know, I think, you know, this last month and, you know, heading into the playoffs, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think so, too. So you had a very long All-Star break and Olympic break. How did that impact you personally?
I thought I was going to be playing, but, you know, for me to get 3 weeks off in the middle of the season, it's definitely the first time, so it was definitely a little weird, but, it was also nice, as you know, at the same time, you know, I got to refresh your body and, you know, physically and mentally, and also get a chance to spend time with my family. So, I mean, that was nice.
I thought, and maybe you can confirm, but I thought that some guys came out of that long break a little behind, and some guys who had played a little bit more came out of it a little bit ahead. Did you see everybody on equal standing when the break was over?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, for me, I feel like, you know, I for me getting that long of a break, I didn't think I'd start off the way I did, but, you know, I felt pretty good. You know, but I could see how it could affect somebody, you know, that, you know, taking that long off and then just starting it back up again. It's not like we had, you know, it's not like we played that many games before, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's just, I mean, it's something that we just had to deal with. And, you know, I feel like from our team standpoint, we adjusted pretty well to that. And we had we didn't even have anybody on Team Japan. So we had everybody got a 3-week break off, you know?
Yeah. And how do you feel like that impacted the team? Is that I guess it was a positive, huh?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, like I said, to have a 3-week break in the middle of the season, it's definitely not something that we're used to. But, I mean, I think it, you know, was kind of good for, you know, our team, you know, like I said, these guys have break off physically. And, you know, the first few games of the exhibition, you know, like starters weren't playing, so they're just getting a chance to rest. And I think it did us well.
Yeah, those practice games seemed to be, I didn't see very many of them because I was too involved in the Olympics, but it seemed to be pretty relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a spring training. You know, you want to stay ready and, you know, keep your timing and just stay baseball ready. But also, it's at the same point, like, you know, how good do I want to do in these games at the same time, you know? Because, you know, they didn't count. Like, I didn't want to go in there just hitting homer after homer. I want to save them.
I gotcha. All right. So I'm sure everybody's still asking you about Shohei Ohtani since you played with him and you were on that CBS 60-minute special as well. When you played with him and you saw firsthand what he could do, what were your expectations for him in the big leagues?
When I first saw what he could do, I mean, I knew he was especially, you know, gifted and talented. I mean, his BP and just, and then how he was on the mound, and I knew he was just gonna have a, you know, great chance to succeed in MLB. You know, but watching what he's doing right now, I mean, it's remarkable. You know, it's just to hit, what, 45 homers, and he's like 9-2, 10-2 on the mound. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he hit number 45 this morning, and this morning Japan time, or today Japan time. I don't believe anybody if they say they envisioned, you know, a 40 home run guy. What's your career high?
Yeah, I mean, did I envision him 40 home plus home runs? Probably not. But I mean, I knew he was gonna, you know, do well in the big leagues. But I mean, and also I look at it from a standpoint of like, for an everyday, you know, playing every day in the big leagues for a position player and a pitcher, it's long. It's a long year, you know, on your body and everything. And for him to do both, I mean, I feel like, you know, he's got to put in double the work and everything. And for him to do what he's doing is crazy.
Yeah, all right. So last question. You guys obviously pushing toward that Pacific League title. Every day is so pressure-packed. And how do you approach all these games? Because it seems like even the fighters were really – that was a tussle up there in Sapporo that you guys played them. I mean, you had to shut them out a couple of times to win. So, how do you approach the last 30 games of the season here?
I mean, just the same way we've been doing all year. I've been talking to people here, and we're in this position, you know, by what we've been doing all year. Just don't change anything. Like you said, going up to Sapporo, you know, we won a couple close games, but I feel like, you know, as part of baseball, you're going to need to win some of those close games sometimes, 1-0 games. But it's going to be interesting this last month, we're like 3.5 games up, and, you know, we're playing the Hawks now, and they're only 3 games out of third. So, no, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the playoff implications every night, no matter who's playing whom, just it has to be a lot of pressure. But it's fun to watch. I don't know about playing in, but it must be fun to watch. It must be fun to play in as well.
Yeah, anytime you get a chance to, you know, play in the atmosphere of, you know, being a first and, you know, competing to win first place and, you know, win the Pacific League, you know, it's always fun. So, man, I can tell you we're having a good time and, you know, hopefully we can just, you know, finish strong.
All right. Well, we hope we can talk to you one more time this season in the playoffs, if that's all right.
Yeah, anytime. You guys need me anytime, you know, let me know.
All right. All right. Good luck the rest of the way and we'll be watching closely. Especially since I predicted that you guys would win. So you make me look good.
sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care.
I'll see you too.
All right, Jim, what did you take away from the interview?
Well, geez, you know what I heard was somebody at the ballpark. I heard that background noise and I was going, it was like I started smelling, you know, the popcorn stuff that they sell. They're cooking and warming up.
Oh, yeah, they do the caramel popcorn. Yeah.
Yeah, and right. I was smelling that. I could hear, you know, I'm going, man, it's like my feet were itching. It's like my feet were saying, when are you going, dude?
I was going to say, if you're smelling something and your feet start itching, that might be different. That might be unconnected.
I think you need to get off of that train. What did somebody say? Get off the stupid train and get on the express or something.
I don't know that those have a connection either, but all right. We'll okay. See if we can make a connection.
Okay. Anyway. So yeah, it was very typical for Brandon. Brandon is like one of these guys. He's just so positive about his teammates that it's a little hard to decipher sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
When he's being, what's the word for it? I mean, it's hard to sometimes sift through what's the real thing and what's the, you know, they're all good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to try, but I did like, you know, your comment, just, you know, when you talked about him having a career high in batting average. And I think that's really interesting because in 2019, he had this phenomenal first half where he was laying off all these pitches outside the zone.
I do recall and that, he, yes.
Yeah, and we talked about it, and he was going, yeah, you know, I've just been working really hard. I worked really hard on my plate discipline over the winter, and I've worked all really hard on it in the spring. And I think what happened was we talked about this in the past, just people adjust, pitchers adjusted to it. And, you know, they made adjustments that got him out and got him back into his old habits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, he missed most of last season. And he's been healthy this season for the most part. And right. I think he's sort of, you know, he got back on that train. Because the big thing is that he used to... You know, I mean, he used to be typically around the area of 120, 130 strikeouts a year.
Right.
And now he's on track to be about maybe 90 to 100 over a full season,
yeah.
Which is for him, you know, it's a 18% improvement. And I think really that's the big improvement for him is going back on that plate discipline regimen that he was on. So
sure.
I congratulate him for that. I think, his talk about the Marines is interesting. And what you mentioned about the 2005 pennant is one thing, but the Marines, of course, the Marines have won two Japan Series championships. Japan Series championships since they've moved to Chiba in, I think, 1992. One under Valentine and one the year after Valentine left in 2010. And they did win the pennant in 2005, but they won it after finishing second in the regular season.
Right.
Right. They won it in the playoffs because you used to be able to do that until the Central League co-opted it and said, no, we don't like that.
Yeah.
So they haven't won a regular season Pacific League championship since 1970. and we're going to throw out the 1974 on a technicality so that we can stretch out that non-regular season streak longer and make it sound more impressive.
Make it sound more impressive. Now, yeah, in 2005, they finished first under Bobby Valentine.
They did not. They did finish first after the playoffs.
Okay.
Because the Pacific League playoffs from 2004 to 2006 made the playoff winner the first place team.
All right. And then they beat the Hawks down in Fukuoka.
Correct. They beat the Lions. They beat the Lions in Chiba, and then they beat the Hawks in however many games they needed to beat the Hawks. The system was different from the current Climax Series format, so it's almost impossible for me to even remember.
It's impossible to calculate, but yeah, I got you. Yeah. All right. For me, well, I think just one point, because we got a lot to talk about coming up here, so I'm just going to point out the one thing is that I just love the way that how he defined and how he viewed the long break, because I think for some guys it's just going to be completely different. And he's a veteran, you know, he's got some years behind him, has the body that has been through a grind here or there of a few seasons. And so we had this long All-Star game / Olympic break that was refreshing for him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was the case for everybody. And you heard Brandon say, hey, look, it was refreshing physically and mentally. And I thought that was a big thing, because I've talked about it in the past that playing the games physically is one thing, but it's also just as much a mental grind to go through and do all the preparation for who's going to be pitching and who you're going to be facing, and to remember all the things and all the meetings that you go to, and you hitters meetings, and then positioning when you're out in the field. And I mean, you just never really get a mental break at all. And once one game finishes, you got to concern yourself with the game the next day, because you can't just go in and prepare the next day. You really have to be ahead. Now, sometimes obviously these teams play each other a lot, and 2 weeks after you play one team at home, you might be playing the same team on the road with the same pitchers, but conditions are going to be different. So you got to consider that stuff. So I thought that was huge. And then you look at some of the younger players in MPB, and the guy who stands out or sticks out most to me right now is Teruaki Sato of the Hanshin Tigers. And he looks like he forgot how to hit a baseball over this break, because before the break, he was decent. He was obviously coming down from the big high that he had early on, but he was still usable. And he has been to the point where they had to send him down to the farm. They brought him back up, obviously, and he's playing again. But he had, I think he had broken the record the other day when I was watching the game. They said he had broken the club record for the longest number of plate appearances without a hit. So that's a major slump. But there are guys like that, you know, the young players who just, you know, they needed to be out there playing daily, or he's hitting the wall. It's hard to figure it out. But, you know, when you had that break, and you mentioned that the teams were going to have their players going through more stuff during the break, that they'd rather play games than go through the practices. Who knows what the Tigers did with him, but he's struggling. I just think that everybody, you know, handled it.
Makes me want to call child services or something.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing to this poor kid? You know, it's his first year. He's just a kid. So I like what Brandon said. As you know, Sushi Boy has been making a lot of sushi here in the second half, and it just, you know, I think he did it did a ton of good for him. And I think he wants another one next year. Let's have another long All-Star / Olympic break for the Beijing games. We can just take it, you know, after the fact.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. So, let's move on and make a seamless transition and talk about the Pacific League pennant race. Now, I asked Jim, because I saw him tweet out the fact that he had done I'm assuming you did a blog post about the projections for both leagues or just one league?
I did a couple of weeks. I started this a couple of weeks ago. It's a real simple formula, and some of the listeners will get it straight off the bat.
Okay, yeah. I know you did it before, and we talked about
it. It's basically the team's records now, and then projecting what share of the league's remaining games they're going to win based on how many runs they've scored and allowed through whatever day. So these projections are through Sunday's, the games of Sunday, September 26th.
Okay. So now I don't know that this is the case, and I meant to ask Brandon about it, but I just think that the rest of the PL doesn't really want to deal with the SoftBank Hawks. Like, they just want them out. And they're not in at the moment, but they can break the hearts of teams and players and coaches and staffs and fans and here and abroad if they get into the playoffs. And I just think the rest of the PL would do a huge service to the Central League if they could keep the Hawks away, not only themselves, but, you know, the Central League. And I think they'll certainly send some cards of thank you to Naoyuki Uwasawa of the Fighters for his performance against SoftBank on Friday, because he blanked them over eight innings and they escaped with a 1-0 win, the Fighters did, over the Hawks. And that really helped the cause of the rest of the Pacific League. But I just can't see that team getting pushed out of the playoffs. I somehow see it coming back. So I'm interested in seeing that. And then the Eagles, you know, I know we all respect their pitching and we thought it was going to be a little bit, you know, I can't say that it has been, I think, about what we thought or what we expected it to be in the preseason, but the hitting is probably worse. The offense is probably worse. So I can easily, I mean, they're floundering. They're not consistent at the plate. They're not hitting for power. I could easily see them being the odd team out. The Buffaloes have not played well since their MVP candidate, Masataka Yoshida, went out with an injury. He came back and he was playing today, but it didn't seem to spark their team, their offense at all. So they're having their issues. The Marines have been marching in place for a little bit here. So I think all the teams could, any of these four teams could be in or out. So what did your projection say about the Pacific League?
Well, they changed today in that as of right now, the Hawks are going to be in the playoffs.
See? Oh, no. Oh, no, hold for the rest of the Pacific League and the Central League teams.
Yeah. I have, you know, no, the latest projections as of Sunday's games have the Hawks finishing in third place in the Pacific League, a half game ahead of the Eagles.
Wowza. So it's the Eagles. Okay. All right.
This is where they had been floating for a while.
Just out there floating.
Well, I mean, they don't move. They don't jump a lot.
Right.
Because every day, of course, the number of remaining games is reduced. Every day the game they play reduces the number of possible outcomes by one game. So they're not going to change a lot from here. So, right now it's Elote 3.5 ahead of Oryx, who are another 2.5 games projected to finish another 2.5 games of the Hawks. I wanted to mention actually a little bit about the Marines, because they weren't specifically related to Brandon Laird. Mm-hmm. Although I did forget one comment, which always strikes me, because the way Brandon talks about the Marines is kind of the way I've thought about the Marines for years, which is? I kind of think of them as the team from Lake Wobegon, which is the, some people in America will know, was the Garrison Keillor's made up town in Minnesota. And he described it as Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average. And the Marines are always that kind of team, you know, this year they really are the Lake Wobegon team, in that they're sort of like the team Brandon talks about. They're all, especially the offense. And in this respect, they're a little bit like one Central League team in that pretty much all the players are above average. The Pacific League on base percentage is .319. The eight Lotte players with 200 plate appearances or more this season are all above that.
Wow.
Well, of course, they lead.
So all the kids are above average.
They are indeed. All the kids are all right, and they're all above average. They lead the. That's why they lead the league in on-base percentage, and they also lead the league in slugging average. The starting pitching, unfortunately, maybe was from a different state because they have been below average this year. But that has changed in the last couple of weeks. He mentioned Kazuya Ojima, which brought up a tweet that Steve at Love Marines decided did not age well, because our new ace, Kazuya Ojima, who surrendered 4 runs, I think, in 3 innings against the Lions today.
But still lasted 6, yeah.
But still lasted 6 and earned the win, you know, so yeah, so go figure. So, but yeah, Ojima had thrown, he followed his first complete game victory 2 weeks ago with his first shutout a week ago.
Right.
So, you know.
Getting hot at the right time, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not just him. I mean, Ayumu Ishikawa came back from his shoulder cleaning surgery, and he's been very solid.
Yes. Well, I don't use that word. He has been.
Okay. He's been effective. I mean, yeah, his pitches have been, his command has been pretty good. His pitches have moved pretty well.
And he has gotten good results. Yeah.
And he's gotten good results. Yes, those three things. I mean, he's not making anybody forget, anybody who's forgettable. I was going to think of somebody who's all
so many. Ultimately,
yeah, I'm trying to think of a pitcher who we can all forget, but I've forgotten him. So, no, so he's
makes
not
sense. Exactly.
He's not going to make anybody forget Masato Yoshi or anything like that. So, but the guy who's been really interesting is Eni Romero.
Yes,
so he's been quite good, and the other guys have just been pitching in and doing their jobs, and then that's been the weak part. The weak part for Lotte has been their starting pitching, and the strong part has been their bullpen, which is among the very best in Japan this year.
Mm.
So interesting. They're very stable.
Yeah. Now I'm not sure that this team is built to win playoff series, but winning
gets to a point. Is that they lack? They have a bunch, you know, that's the thing with teams that are very average is the depth doesn't help a lot in a 3-6 game series.
Well, it doesn't hurt a lot either. It just
it doesn't hurt, but it doesn't help, you know.
If you win because
you got 10 guys on your rosters who are B pluses, but you can only play 8 of them at one time.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's not helping you.
We did talk about the fact that Leonis Martin is going to be out probably the rest of the regular season. He's going to try to get back for the playoffs with that. I'm not sure if it was actually a broken toe. I said that in the interview, but it was a broken bone in the foot for sure. Yeah. He fouled a ball off of his foot. So that's a problem. But I still like the way this team puts wins up on the board. But like I was saying, in terms of a playoff situation, I think for Lotte to have the pennant and to get all the games in the second round of the Climax Series at home is a bit of an advantage. But I still think it's going to be a challenge for this team to get through to the Japan Series. So I'm looking forward to watching the playoffs just like everybody else is. But I think if the Marines end up being the pennant winners, I'll have to think twice about actually picking. I'll have to see if that Hawks team, I still think, is pretty scary.
Well, the Hawks have been good. And the thing that has moved, I think, the Hawks up is Alfredo Despaigne coming back and playing like hitting like Alfredo Despaigne.
Sure.
He'd been basically zero the whole year that he was with the team. So, and the other thing is the two relievers coming back and the two relievers, Levon Moinello and Yuito Mori, coming back and pitching well enough, because they've been just a huge vacuum at the end of the bullpen.
Sure.
And I mean, it's common. I mean, there's a lot of teams that have been, you know, well, I won't say a lot of teams, but particularly the, you know, a week or two ago, it was The Hawks did not have their best relievers. The Eagles did not have their best reliever.
Mm.
And so it was kind of interesting to see how that was going to shake out. But the Hawks guys are back. And the Eagles guys are kind of crossing their fingers and hoping that Sung Chi Hao thinks, you know, suddenly maybe they take him to a shrink and hypnotize him and tell him that he's actually a right-handed version of Yuki Matsui. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they're piecing it together. I think they're getting it done. Their problem isn't the pitching, so to speak. It's more about generating enough offense consistently, in my opinion. And, they were having a bad September. The Buffaloes, like I said, had been having a bad September. And those teams need to, if they're really going to make a run, once the playoffs come, they need to get guys healthy and then start to just play better, more consistent baseball. And you saying that the Hawks are going to be projected, or you're projecting that the Hawks are going to be in the playoffs or in the postseason, that's pretty depressing, I think, for Pacific League teams and Central League teams that are, you know, considering who they might play when they get to the Japan Series. But let's switch over to the Central League and talk about that side, which I was surprised when I saw your projection. You said, you know, it basically said you had the Swallows projected to win the Central League. Now, they woke up on Thursday, I think it was, or they went to sleep on Wednesday in first place, and all the ties are helping them with the winning percentage. And my honest hope was that I didn't see the baseball gods coming down and saying, you know what, we're going to have a team finish with the best winning percentage, but be a half game back in the actual standings. But they're the team that goes as the pennant winners. I don't want to see that kind of thing happen. I think that happened before, long ago. That was something that was in Warren Cromartie's book.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Now, because Japan doesn't count ties as anything, they can't. Mm-hmm. They are non-events, and winning percentages, you know, wins divided by wins plus losses.
Right.
That when teams with a lot of ties lose fewer games than, you know, lose fewer games, they can win, they can have a higher winning percentage while winning fewer games. And typically, this has happened several times in NPB. I mean, and typically the complaint by the team that loses more games,
mm-hmm.
the team that loses the most games complains that they won more.
Well,
and that they should be in, they won more, so they should be in first place, while ignoring the fact that they also lost more.
Yeah. Looking at one side of the win-loss column. Yeah.
Right. And this has happened a number of times. I know it's happened twice to the Giants at least. It happened in 1974 when the V9 era failed to become the V10 era.
Okay.
think of what a disaster that would have been after they'd made all that V9 stuff. So that happened.
And T-shirts, they
lost. Right, exactly. And the Giants also lost to the Carp once. And I don't remember what year that was, but that happened, and Cromartie was playing for the Giants, and that annoyed him. And it happened to the Cebu Lions a couple times, I believe, as well, where they basically lost a pennant because they didn't tie as many games.
Right, right.
So, I'll have to talk about that in another dimension, because it's too long and complicated and perhaps on the side of boring. But so that's an issue. I mean, I had to explain in a story why I didn't want to go into detail about the Hanshin Tiger, the relationship in games between the Hanshin Tigers and the Yakult Swallows, who were zero games behind in the pennant race, but effectively a half game back.
But in first place, yeah, it was just so weird. So, I mean, this is just wild for me. I, as much as I want to brag about being the only one not to bury the team in the prediction show, and I saw a lot of experts as well just throwing them in the last place, and I had them in fourth, really? And I still can't believe – you don't remember?
Well, I had them in fifth, but that's – yeah.
Yeah, I had them in fourth. I had them the highest of anybody I knew, but – But I cannot really make a salient argument that, you know, the Tigers or Giants will turn this thing around for themselves. The Tigers just seem to flounder, and the Giants, it looks funky. It looks weird for them, and I don't like using this word, but they're failing. They don't pitch well when they need to pitch well. They don't get the hits when they need to get the hits. Even tonight, they got I think it was Naoki Yoshikawa sent a ball to center, and I thought that's a home run in Tokyo Dome, and that hit the wall and stayed in, and they ended up, you know, not winning the game and losing by a run. It's just weird to watch, but the Swallows actually, when they've won 8 games in a row now, and they actually are starting to function like a first place team, and suddenly all their pitchers are really good, and they've been scoring runs all season, but when they go out and get really, I wouldn't say dominant, but they get very credible performances from all their starters throughout a week, that has to really concern the rest of the Central League. And obviously nothing is done. You have to go out in the playoffs and do it all over again. So there's no real, this is a done deal, we're going to the Japan Series type of situation or scenario or anything like that. However, once the other two teams beat the heck out of each other in the first stage or first round of the playoffs, they're at a disadvantage. They can't set their rotations to go up against the Swallows in a situation where they're going to be playing at Jingu in all their games. But, you know, for all the games, if the Swallows manage to pull this thing off, which I still am shaking my head from side to side as I say this, I can't imagine. But here's the other thing. I didn't trust the Tigers from the beginning, and that's why I said, look, I think the Tigers have all the talent. They have the best talent, probably the best rotation. They're going to have a lot of enough power hitters. They're going to have enough offense, blah, blah, blah. But some way, somehow, they're going to trip themselves up and not be able to win the pennant. And they're still there, right there in position. They just they need to beat the Swallows when they play them. That's for sure at this point.
Yeah, the Swallows really are just, simply put, they've just played better baseball than everybody in the league right now.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean,
they're, like I said, they're functioning like a first place team.
Last week, it's as we said during the podcast, and if you hadn't noticed it, I wouldn't even have looked about the team ERA, because I'm just typically, because of where the Swallows play at Jingu Stadium, which is the best home run league, home run park in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, when the Swallows ERA is, when the Swallows pitching is really, really good, it's about the league average, because, you know, just giving up all the home runs at Jingu adds, typically their ERA at home is like a run and a half better than it is on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what we're used to from the Swallows. And I'm not used to seeing them have an ERA that looks like they play at Koshien.
Yeah, it's 2.5 in September. It's less than 2.5 in September. And that's team-wise. I mean, the starters are less than 2.5 and the relievers are less than 2.5. It's just amazing. They just turn everything around.
Well, the guy, and you know, I talk about him a lot, and I probably don't talk about him enough, is 41-year-old Masanori Ishikawa. I mean, what he did tonight was exactly what he's been doing game in and game out. Now, he's now started 12 games, and
yes,
of those, okay, he started 12 games, and in 11 of those games, and he had one bad game. 7 times he went 6 innings and allowed 2 runs or less. Mm. The other times he went 5 innings and around 2 runs or less.
Mm.
3 times he didn't allow a run at all.
I swear, I'm sitting there watching at home, and I'm like, I know I could hit that. I could hit that. That's about all I could hit. But I could hit that.
he's essentially, right this year, he's essentially a low speed version of what we saw from Yudai Ono last year. Precise location, mixes his pitches, and he's precise about his location. And he throws stuff in the zone that nobody's expecting. and they sit there and look at it and said, you know, they sit there looking at called strike three and saying, how stupid are you throwing that pitch right down the middle?
Right. How stupid am I? I'm the one now.
You know, how stupid is this pitcher?
Still playing. Yeah.
I could crush that ball.
Yes.
But I'm going back to the dugout, shaking my head. And he throws, you know, he pinpoints that slider at the knees. And he throws the fastball up and in on guys. He works inside. He works outside. He works up and down. He'll tease people out of the zone. And he's got a 2.16 ERA. So, you know, he's just been a go-to guy. And the team is sort of is operating on that really combative. You know, I mentioned this earlier in the season that they pitch like a Pacific League team. They strike out. They're the second best strikeout team. In fact, they're the best strikeout team in the Pacific, in the Central League, even with Ishikawa, who doesn't strike out hardly anybody. And Kazutoshi Taguchi, who really doesn't strike out anybody. But overall, they're the best strikeout team in the Central League. They lead both leagues in fewest walks issued.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, and then of course they give up a bunch of home runs because they play in Jingu. But yeah, so what?
Well, not to the Dragons, who they shut out in three consecutive games this weekend. Yeah,
well, they did.
Nice.
They did give up a three run home run. You know, they did give up a few, but I would guess that most of the home runs they've given up this year are solo home runs because they're not walking anybody.
Right. Well, here's the thing. They have six games against the Giants head-to-head. They've got five against the Tigers. And they have only seven against these bottom-half teams, including Chunichi and Hiroshima. So I understand your projections. I just think that 11-game stretch where they've got the Tigers and the Giants, I would say they have to pretty much split maybe 5-6 or 6-5, somewhere around
there.
They could be in trouble.
Well, yeah, they could be in trouble, but I see them doing that pretty easily. One of the things about the Swallows is sort of like the thing that's a problem with most teams.
Which
you
is?
Look at their import players and look at the import players they've lost this season. Oh, wait, there aren't any. Look at the import players who haven't produced this season. Oh, wait, there aren't any. You know, to me, that's sort of their hole card this year. In addition to all the other stuff, they've got Domingo Santana, who hasn't been playing, starting the last couple of days. I haven't quite figured that out. I'm guessing he's not running well because he's pinch hitting. He's either got an issue, might have an issue with his arm or something. But Jose Osuna's been really good. Domingo Santana's been really good. Albert Suarez has been quite good, if not good late into games. Cy Snead has also been quite good, if not late into games. Scott McGuff is the closer, and he gets more swinging strikes per pitch than anybody in NPB. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they are pitching great. So, I don't know. I'm going to say your projections don't play out, and that's the Tigers or
that's
the Giants
fine. I mean,
come
I'm
back.
Not
but,
the,
but I have no faith in it. I seriously have no faith in it. I'm just saying it
Giants.
Because I can't see this team winning because nobody. You know, expected this. It was obvious. There were none of the experts picked them to finish even in the playoffs. Maybe one out of the guys I saw on Pro Yaki News when they had their big 3-hour special this year. So
one of the former Swallows, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just being nice. It is unlikely, but so many things have gone right for them. They've been relatively healthy. I mean, they did lose Ogawa for some times, but he's having one of his better seasons. And I think the run support plays so much a part with them. Their offense has not been good the last few years. And Tetsuto Yamada playing like Tetsuto Yamada is a huge difference.
Yep. And again, they didn't give up a run to the Dragons in three games this weekend series and beat the brains out of the Chunichi guys 16-0 tonight. So they are functioning like a first place team. Let's make a four-seam transition. And since we're talking about all these teams and getting close to playoff situations, we want to rehash or revisit the MVP talk. Now, we had it earlier in the season one time, and I think a lot of the guys that were on that list are not on the list anymore. But for me and the Jim, we have fundamental differences about differences of opinion of what the MVP means. So for me, yeah, it just means a player who contributes the most to a winning situation. It's very clear, very concise. I don't know how long it would take Jim to explain what the MVP means to him, but it's just different. I don't think you could do it in 5 minutes. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't penalize a player for his context.
Okay. Whatever. If you start off in the abstract, you know, prove to the new listeners that we don't see eye to navel on this thing.
Well, yeah,
but that's fine.
I mean, if you're the best player in the league, it doesn't matter. And first of all, my opinion, MVP most valuable is the guy who puts up the season that separated from his teammates, separated from the wins and losses of the team, is the best year. If you put them, if you analyze it and you adjust, you know, you take into account what this guy does on offense and defense and pitching, and you understand sort of the influences that affect it. And then you put all these players and you line them up and you say, which guy had the best season? And that has, in my opinion, has very, very, very little to do with where the team finishes in the pennant race. Okay. That's how I see it. Okay.
All right. So I've been on the Munetaka Murakami train for much of the season. The Yakult slugger, he has 100 home runs now. He's the youngest to get to 100 home runs, I believe, since Kazuhiro Kiyohara. Mm-hmm. Also 100 RBIs this season. He had a bunch tonight too. So I think the Yakult Swallows actually winning the Central League really takes a lot of the heat off the Japanese media, takes them off the hook, because I think they'll get it right if they pick him. But I really like what Kazuma Okamoto has done, and he probably even has slightly better numbers overall. More home runs, more RBIs, blah, blah, blah. But Murakami has a better OPS. He has a better batting average, twice as many walks, a better slugging average. He's hitting a slightly fewer double plays, but he has improved his defense. Now, he's probably not even on the level in the same stratosphere as Okamoto defensively, but he is a lot better than he was. And to me, that shows improvement. So I'm going to give him points there. So I just think he has been fantastic. I mean, he's 21. I can't even imagine if he were to stay here and play in Japan for 20 years, which obviously he's not. But he has been really steady all season long. And he's just my clear-cut MVP. Probably different from yours, but I like what he's done. And obviously... The winning situation helps in terms of the Japanese media jumping on board, but I just have liked him all season long. I don't remember him going through any long slumps. Seems like most of his hits either help produce a lead or keep a lead. So he's just been the guy for me. What about you?
Well, he's one of the guys I'm certainly thinking about. I'm also thinking about Tetsuto Yamada, and I'm also thinking about Seiya Suzuki.
Yep.
Just a phenomenal year from him, you know, in a park that doesn't help him. And this is a guy who runners generally are pretty cautious about running against.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still throwing them out like they're running backwards.
Like they're little kids. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, it's like the ball. Well, it's like as soon as he releases the ball, they start going in slow motion.
it's like stop animation. Yeah, so, it's true. He's on my list, and I didn't mention him, but he fills a lot of the categories Again, for those newer listeners, I used to play basketball and I played on a team and we won one game in the league. But just because I scored the most points in the league, they gave me the MVP and I thought it was meaningless. I didn't understand it. And for me as a competitor, as someone who's athletic and who plays, I thought, well, that's silly. Give it to a player who helped this team win, because I did do a lot to try to help my team win, but we didn't win. So it really doesn't mean anything to me.
Oh, let me ask a question. So all those things you did actually didn't help your team win. You only tried to help them win. So scoring.
Are you asking me if I was trying to help them win or if I was just trying to get points?
No. I mean, let's put it this way. I'm going to.
I just wanted to clarify your question. I understood.
I'm not saying you're trying to get points. I'm saying you were trying to help your team win. But I think.
Sure. Yeah. Of course.
But by scoring all the points and by being a good player, being a really good player, you do help your team win. There's a difference between helping your team win and making your team win, which one player cannot do. And that's my problem with the MVP race, the whole MVP. That's my problem with the concept that says he should be on a winning team, because the game in which one person can't do it alone is the game in which we insist that he's the MVP because he did do it. He was the one who made his team win.
Well, that's why I asked.
Yeah. Okay. But I wasn't insinuating anything. I was saying.
I didn't think you were. I'm just saying that there is certainly a difference. But nobody can make his team win. They can only help his team win.
Right.
But if everybody can make their team win, then no team would lose.
But it sounded like you tried to help them win, and you didn't actually do anything to help them win. That's how it came off to me.
And you were
I'm helping, John.
I was actually helping.
You were actually contributing to wins. And the fact that your team didn't win, to me, doesn't detract.
That's a fallacy, because if I were contributing to wins, then we would have won. But I was contributing. But you said I was contributing to wins, which they weren't wins. We only won one game, so I was contributing to helping, to trying to get us to win. But I wasn't contributing to wins. I was just contributing. The MVP. Oh, go ahead.
Fallacy is the other. No, I'm saying that again. You're saying I can't judge about your season because I can't. You know, I can't. I can't analyze it, and I'm no good analyzing basketball in any case, but I'm saying that by that account, you know, you would never have an MVP on a player whose team finishes below 500 because they didn't help their team win enough. But when you're one of 15 important contributors to a team, there is nobody on the planet who can take a lousy team and make them win. But that doesn't mean his contribution. And I'm not going to discount the greatest player on earth who plays for a lousy team by saying, well, sorry, you know, your team is lousy, so you can't have been the best player in the league, because that's just, the math doesn't add up for me.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're first of all, I only said a winning situation doesn't have to be a championship situation. And then the second part was that.
That's why I said below average, below 500 team.
Sure. And again, people, we talked about this once 11 years ago, and we have not really debated it. And we're not going to debate it here either. But you can see we don't agree on fundamentally what an MVP is. So we're not going to settle that here. So let's go on. So I am looking at the Pacific League and I see a number of players. I think it would have been easy early on to just choose Masataka Yoshida of the Oryx Buffaloes, because they were winning. He looked very good. He was a Triple Crown candidate. Basically, he was amongst the leaders in those three major categories on offense, and he was looking good, but he got injured. And certainly he has come back, and he has a chance to add to his league-leading batting average and can maybe jump up on some of the other numbers. But I kind of think the Japanese press is going to forget him unless he goes really nuts. It goes wild over the last couple weeks here or few weeks here. So I rearranged my list, and I brought Brandon Laird up. I had Leonis Martin on it. I'm going to have to bring him down since he's injured at the moment. And Masataka Yoshida, I'm going to leave him in fourth, maybe fifth place. But I moved a couple guys up. Now, one guy who's always there is Yuki Yanagita of the Hawks, and he's still there for me. But the guy I have up at top right now I wouldn't say with Brandon Laird, but I have him up top, is Yutaro Sugimoto, Mash Mash, I like to call him, Yutaro Mash Mash Sugimoto of the Oryx Buffaloes. So what have you got in the Pacific League?
Okay, these are the guys I've gone in the Pacific League. I did like Leonis Martin. I still like him. I still like him better than Brandon Laird. Better overall production right now, better, far more defensive value. Another guy I like, and I'm still sifting through it, is Tomoya Mori. He's had another outstanding season, which I like. And Yuki Inagita. Those are my three guys I'm sort of debating about right now. I don't want to go into who I think's the best, because I don't think there's a lot separating them.
I don't either, but Sugimoto wasn't on your list, or just wasn't high enough on your list?
No, he wasn't. No, he's I like what he's doing. I just think he was a little bit late to that game. You know, he got off of that.
He's still got the numbers.
Yeah, but he also makes a lot. He's made a lot of outs. I mean, the second half has been really good, but the first half was a lot of outs, and I think that's been a sort of the thing. His defense is still pretty. His defense has become good enough for a guy who produces runs, but kind of also the guy that you don't want to say you're actually starting in right field.
Yeah, I know. You got to take the good with the bad. I mean, he helped make that play to save the run the other day on Saturday to throw a runner out at the plate. And,
he did. He
preserved that run. He made a nice play off the wall. But
the arm.
No. I mean, that's just one play. Yeah, that's just one play. And I know.
And he made a good catch in foul territory. So I see him growing with confidence, which was something he severely lacked when they – you know, confidence is kind of an Oryx – a lack of confidence is an Oryx Buffalo legacy issue, because because you'd go out there, and if you caught the ball with your left foot in front of your right foot and the coach told you the right foot is the way to do it, it's like a ticket to the minor leagues.
Well, I understand process over results. That's not a problem.
But anyway, so that's he wasn't on the top of my list. So I can, you know, there's only so much room at the top of the list. So
I see.
But
I
respect. I don't disrespect anybody choosing him. I he's one of my favorite players. So.
All right. Well, we will see. Obviously, how things turn out. I think Yanagita is just a fan favorite. But if they don't win, again, this is going to be really hard for the Japanese media to just pick someone. And Japanese media is very lazy in general, picks the guy with the most home runs and most RBIs, and that's about it. Maybe batting average can play a role, but it has to usually come from the winning team. So if Chiba ends up winning the title, it's going to be really hard, I think, for the media to come up with one guy. Votes are going to be all over the place.
Yeah, but they've got good players, so it's not going to be a case of like 2014 when the Oryx Buffaloes finished a hair out of the pennant race, but the Hawks had guys. I'm still smoking about them picking him over Yuki Inagita, because Inagita kind of had only a really good MVP caliber season, but somehow they had. I guess they had too many guys on the team who were really good, and they picked Chihiro Kaneko instead because, well, why not? You won 20, you know, you won a bunch of games, so why not? Usually, I think it's not I think to some degree you're right. It is laziness that a lot of people just say, oh, I've got this ballot to fill out. Let me just fill it out and get done with it because I'm so busy, especially at the end of the season preparing for the, you know, the playoff, preparing for the Japan series. But I think the fear is the other thing. You know, we've talked about the fear of being ridiculed. Because if your colleagues say, you know, who did you vote for? You don't want to pick somebody who actually requires thought. Because, you know, you pick somebody safe. It's about safe picks.
All right, I'm still going to call it lazy. I just think they just pick the guys with the most home runs and RBIs, and that's it. They don't put a lot of thought into it.
It comes out like that. It comes out. Yeah. But generally, it's they take the pennant winner, and then they sort of, like, throw all the pennant-winning players, and the guy with the most eye-popping numbers on the pennant winner is the MVP, unless they're all kind of, like, woebegone-ish above average. And then they'll pick, you know, somebody who had from another team, but generally, nah.
Yeah.
It's generally that's the way to go. It's a path of least resistance.
Okay. All right. And making a two-seam transition, it's time for As the Pitch Turns, and we weren't able to have that last week because Masahiro Tanaka got rained out. But he is now 4-6 after losing on Monday. A week ago, if you're listening on the day that we upload the show, on the 27th. So he didn't pitch very well. 5 innings, 5 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. But he was much better today on shorter rest. 7 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 7 strikeouts. And he was actually taken off the hook for a loss. He was about to go 4-7. 4-7. Can you imagine? he's taken off the hook for a loss. Egor Omogi in the 9th inning singled in the tying run. And so the Buffaloes and Eagles tied 1-1. Pretty much a mediocre performance last week. He didn't look all that good to me, but here's the thing that's starting to worry me and was worrying me in that particular game, that he had given up home runs in 6 consecutive games, at least one. That's concerning to me because that's not the Makun we know and love. That's some other guy. But of course, he hasn't been the Makun we know and love all season. So why is giving up 6 home runs? Home runs in 6 consecutive games going to change that? He just didn't look very good the other day, though.
Yeah, he's been watching, and I keep waiting for his fastball to get better.
He sold it.
Yeah, he did. Well, you know, I think the elbow strain has reduced his velocity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's never been he's not throwing anywhere near as fast as he did in his first couple of months with the Yankees and as fast as he did in his last year with the Rockton Eagles. That's one thing. He's been... Since other than the elbow injury, since 2012, he's been very stable. Before, up until the middle of the 2012 season, he was very inconsistent health wise. It was back and it was knee and it was always this and that. He was always going through that. He seems to have sorted through most of his physical ailment issues. Mm-hmm. And learn to deal with those and prevent things. So I like that. And that's really where Masahiro Tanaka is as a pitcher right now. He's the safe and sane Masahiro Tanaka.
Okay.
You know, suitable for kids to play with.
Yeah.
And that he's not going to do anything silly to get himself injured. He knows what he's got as a pitcher, and he's ultra competitive. And those are really good things. His control is his command is usually pretty good. He's got a bunch of pitches that are, I'm going to say right now, he has a B+ slider, maybe even an A- slider. That's really his good pitch. Everything else after that is B-, C+. The fastball is fast. He can throw a fastball. But the spin on it is lousy. It's straighter than it's ever been. And Japanese hitters, they're going up, you know, my buddy Kenichi Yazawa he was on Pro Yaku News last Monday, and he said, look, that fastball, it's like people are just waiting for him to, you know, they're a lot of guys are going up, they're just sitting fastball and just sort of ignoring everything else. And when they get a fastball, they're taking that thing to the bank.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the case. I mean, it pretty much doesn't matter where he throws it. They're gonna connect with it unless, you know, it's 6 inches up out of the, you know, up in the eyes or something. But the fastball is not good. It got incrementally better than it did at the start of the season, at the start of his season. But it has been holding him back, and he's gone to the two-seamer, which is basically a trick pitch for him. It's not really very good. It's sort of like, I'll get you out with a two-seamer because you're looking for the four-seamer. But it's so bad that it's the below-average pitch in his arsenal, and he leans on it a lot. The cutter's better. The forkball is not dropping very much. The change has been good. The change is a good addition. So the change and the slider are really his good pitches. But if you can't throw a good fastball, nobody's going to respect it.
Right.
So, you know, he's having that issue every game. Today on Sunday, he threw some very crisp fastballs. He mixed his pitches very well. I thought, you know, that's where he does well. When he's got command of about three pitches, then he can be pretty, pretty feisty.
Yeah.
But without the fat, without, if he, on the days when he has a good fastball, he's pretty much lights out. But those days are pretty much non-existent now.
Yep. Yeah. I didn't get to see as much of the game as I wanted to. And I did see some of those crisp, sharp moving fastballs. But for the most part, I didn't get to see every pitch. And I just knew that he was getting outs. And I was glad to see that.
I almost think he's trying to make up for the lack of spin by throwing it hard. He was throwing 100. He hit 157 on one pitch I saw today, which is like 2013
version. Yeah.
Masahiro Tanaka, you know, that 97 mile an hour fastball, 98, and but they're, most of them are so straight that if you're looking for it and you. And again, he's trying to fool people, and he is fooling people. But it's not overall. It has not been working, and it's worked. His ability to pitch has helped him have an ERA in the twos for most of the season. But he's been hurt by the fact that pretty much every game he pitches, the Eagles score one or two runs,
which was the case today in this 1-1 tie. So yeah. That's a problem.
Today was the former major leaguers give up a run day.
Yeah, Yoshihisa Hirano of the Buffaloes gave up that run in the ninth inning. So, all right, let's go to fielding questions. Okay, so the question this week comes from Gabe in Calgary, and he said, inspired by the Zealous Wheeler trade this season and the Hirokazu Sawamura deal last year, which trade do you think was the biggest steal in NPB history or the most one-sided, if that helps make it any easier to pick? Jim, because I don't really have any really big trades in my head at all, maybe one.
Well, question for you, Gabe, is who did the Giants trade Zealous Wheeler to this year?
No. He meant the Zealous getting Zealous.
The last year. Okay. I was confused. Yeah, that was 2020, but I'm 2020 seems like a lost year to a lot of people in a lot of cases, and a lot of things that happened in 2020, I think they happened this year. So I'm... Yeah, I understand. Okay, well, that's an interesting question. Both of those trades were one-sided trades. And I thought really hard about this, and I came up and I'm going to be partially excused because player sales in Japan are called trades.
Mm-hmm.
They don't happen in MLB for a story that doesn't belong here, but they don't happen in MLB now because of a rule they made in the 1960s or 70s. But they used to happen all the time, and they happen all the time in Japan. And probably the biggest player movement, most one-sided player movement, was Ralph Bryant, who had no place to play on the Chunichi Dragons at that time. You could have three or four players on the roster, but only two could be on the first team.
Foreign players. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You could only have two on the first team, and they had Ralph Bryant sitting on the minors, and they had a 34-year-old Gary Renicky on the first team who had proven to hit a bunch of home runs, and he stopped. Gary Racich. And he was 34, and they said, let's keep the 34-year-old guy, and let's move the 25-year-old power hitter who's unestablished. Well, Gary, as he was known, he was registered, had his worst season in Japan, had a good on-base season, but he was a first baseman at a big home run at a tremendous home run hitting park. And I think 15 home runs in Nagoya Stadium ain't going to make anybody think you can play first base regularly. Mm. Whereas Ralph Bryant went on to became a three-time Pacific League home run champion, two-time best nine, and the 1989 MVP.
Mm.
For which the Dragons got zero. And we had a question too, and this is kind of related to that. And so, three-time home run champion, two-time best nine, MVP. How many times do you think Ralph Bryant was an all-star in Japan?
Maybe once.
Correct. In 1990, of course, they used to have a limit of two imported players on the All-Star team, regardless of how many were voted in. They've since done away with that silly-ass rule.
Right.
So he was an All-Star one time the year after he was MVP. So that's one trade. And the other one, which if you look up stupid trades in Japanese, you get... I think it's a Sayaku, which is the worst case trades in Japanese. And this was a 1992 trade between one of many, many, many trades between the Oryx franchise and the Hanshin Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
But typically those trades are Oryx sending a guy with youth and speed to a washed up Tigers player, because Oryx thinks that if we have a washed-up Tigers player, people will come to watch our lousy team with the washed-up because of the washed-up Tigers player.
Right.
However, in this case, it was a genuinely great third baseman, Hiromi Matsunaga.
Mm-hmm.
He went from Oryx at the end of the 1992 season. He went to Hanshin, and in exchange, they got a very unhappy strikeout pitcher, Koji Noda. Noda played five seasons. He was on the roster for eight, but he played five seasons more for the Buffaloes. He went 56-35, led the PL in wins in 1993, and in 1995 set the NPB record with 19 strikeouts in a game. Hiromi Matsunaga played 80 games for the Hanshin Tigers before... free agency was introduced in the 1994 before the 1994 season, and he skedaddled back to the Pacific League to the Daiei Hawks.
Oh wow!
so if you look up the worst case scenario trades, that's the one that pops up.
Now I didn't have any. I just remember the Dragons picking up Koichi Sekikawa from the Tigers, and I don't even remember if that was a trade or not.
It was. And that was kind of the same thing, because the Tigers and Dragons both had a catcher that their team preferred to play in the outfield.
Uh-huh.
And that was the Tigers' Sekikawa. It's like they didn't like his defense at catcher, but they liked his bat, so they had him playing in right field. And the Dragons had a guy who was a catcher, but they liked their starting catcher better. And so this guy played in the outfield a lot, and he didn't have a big... defensive reputation. And Koichi Sekikawa went on to a career as a fringe player and coach. And the other guy is now currently the Hanshin Tigers manager, Akihiro Yano.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was a pretty good trade for the Tigers. Yep. Because he went on to become probably the second most well thought of defensive catcher of his generation.
But it wasn't a steal or anything. I thought it was a good trade for both teams because
There were a bunch of guys, and those two guys were kind of the minor parts in it, which is kind of funny. So it happens sometimes when sort of the throwaway guys, the big name guys, are kind of. There was an infielder. There was a former rookie of the year, going from a shortstop, going from the Tigers to the Dragons. He was sort of the big name of the bunch, but no, that was not a steal, but Akira Yama definitely he was a key part of the Tigers 2003 and 2005 pennants.
And Sekikawa was basically the guy who helped spearhead the Dragons into the Japan Series, and that's how you and I met. So without him, you and I would not have met, because that was 1999. All right, so we also got a couple of other comments. Corgi Racing via the Reddit feed was talking about how he or she, I don't know if it's a man or a woman or a male or a female, but said was very happy to hear the Higgins interview and hopes that Higgins is back on the show again because he seemed to have so much to say. Also appreciates the playoff talk. And this person also said that they don't mind when we don't have a guest on the show because it's enjoyable to listen to you and I just talk back and forth about whatever's going on. So that was nice.
That is very kind of you to say. I appreciate that.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons we started the podcast was because of our conversations that we had in the office when we used to work together back in the before time. So
yeah, and people had to tell us, why don't you guys get, they kept saying, why don't you guys get a podcast?
That's not what they said. I think it was more like, why don't you guys get a room, but and one preferably well, one where I we was, can't hear you.
I was paraphrasing that.
Okay. Anyone else that has a question, a comment, or anything else, advice, things you'd like to hear on the show, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions or, again, anything you'd like via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. As, like I said, the business end of the season, it is time to make things happen. And I keep laughing week. When I think about the Swallows possibly winning the Central League. keep laughing. Go ahead.
Laugh it up, funny boy.
Okay. Look, you know, you got nothing to say. You're a fan and you were not a believer. So get out of my face with that.
I'm not.
You take you and your San Francisco Giants, just get out of my face.
when you said the Swallows, look at the Swallows ERA, I said, like, why? I don't want to. I never want to. You know, it's like a dare. That's something you say to a 5-year-old. You want to threaten. Oh, yeah? You want to try that one? Look at the Swallows ERA. You'll be sorry.
All right. While Jim keeps talking, we will talk to you next week, people. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.